All right, I'm going to go ahead and get started. Thank you for coming to my presentation. My name's Thomas Stefaniak. I work in the sorghum breeding project at Texas A&M University. I don't think it's necessary for me to belabor the point that energy policy is extremely important in our country. Anybody who watched a news story or looked at a newspaper today saw a story about energy policy. In 2007, the United States Congress passed the Energy Security Act. One of the mandates of this act was that by the year 2030, 30% of the transportation fuels consumed in America come from renewable sources. Renewable energy can come from either living or non-living sources, and as agronomists, we have the ability to help to develop and improve living sources of energy. Bioenergy is not a new idea. In fact, Henry Ford said he designed the Model T to be run on corn ethanol. Ethanol is the most convenient form of bioenergy for transportation. Right now, the United States and Brazil are the leading producers of bioethanol. In America, the principal source of bioethanol is starch, and most of the starch comes from maize. But as one of the previous speakers said, substantial amount also comes from sorghum. In Brazil, sucrose is directly fermented into ethanol, and the sucrose comes from their sugarcane crop. These two sources of ethanol are not adequate. In fact, if we right now dedicated our entire corn crop to bioethanol production, it wouldn't be enough to meet our mandates. So we need a new source of bioethanol. The most abundant biological compound on Earth is cellulose. This is where the second generation of bioethanol is going to come from. It's the so-called lignocellulosic conversion of ethanol. Perennial grasses have gotten a lot of attention and are no doubt going to be very important sources of this feedstock for bioethanol. But annual grasses also have a role to play and, in fact, have several advantages over perennials. Sorghum has many of these advantages. As an annual crop, it's amenable to more rapid breeding progress. We have a robust research and seed producing community that's going to help facilitate improvement of this bioenergy feedstock. So what do we need to do to get to this second generation? The first thing that needs to happen is the conversion process needs to be optimized. This is the job of chemical engineers and biochemists wearing their white lab coats. Once they do that, they'll be able to give us specifications about exactly what they need in the feedstock, and the agronomists, we agronomists will be able to go to work improving genetically and in the area of management strategies to improve the feedstock. But without this information, we already know that two things are going to need in a feedstock are species that produce high amounts of biomass in marginal lands so that they don't displace food crops. These biomasses are going to need to be very high in structural carbohydrates. So the objectives of this study, which is really a description of sorghum, is to evaluate four sorghum types for composition relative to bioenergy traits and to project potential ethanol yield from these sorghum types. So we chose 152 sorghum samples. We were intending to find samples that were diverse in several different areas because the end result of this project, which is not what I'm going to talk much about today, is to develop NIR curves for predicting these composition traits. So we wanted a very diverse panel. There were 152 samples that came from 108 genotypes. Some of these genotypes were commercial varieties. Some were experimental lines developed at Texas A&M. Some were hybrids. Some were inbreds. Some of the samples contained only stalk tissue, while some contained stalk, leaf, and even panicle tissue. The growth stages varied, because the different types are intended for or need to be harvested at different times, depending on what their final use is intended to be. But all of them fell into four types. They were either biomass, forage, sorghum Sudan, or sweet sorghum types. Here is a picture showing some of these, or all of these types. Back here we see some photoperiod-sensitive bioenergy types. In front of them we see some short-statured grain sorghums. Right here we have some sweet sorghums. Up here we have, you can see these loose panicles characteristic of sorghum Sudan grass types, and over here we have some traditional forage sorghums. The composition data I'm going to present came from a dietary fiber analysis that was performed by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory under the direction of Dr. Ed Wolfram. More details on this assay can be found at this URL. This procedure basically quantifies all the constituents within the biomass sample, but for this paper, I'm only going to report upon storage carbohydrates, structural carbohydrates, or some organic polymers and inorganic minerals in the form of ash. The data you'll see will show measures of glucan, which is a principal component of cellulose, and xylan, which is a principal component of hemicellulose. For simplicity's sake, what you need to remember from this slide is that the storage carbohydrates and structural carbohydrates are good and positive for the lignocellulosic conversion process. Protein and ash are negative, in fact, waste products to the process, and lignin, we're not exactly sure how that's going to fit into the process at this point. The statistical analyses I used were PROC-GLM and PROC-CORE of SAS. Here is a table showing some means and ranges for 9 composition traits. You can see that 7 of the 9 traits have individual types, at least, that are significantly different from the others. I mentioned earlier that this dietary fiber analysis measures all of the composition, but we're only reporting on 9 here, so these columns here are not going to add up to 100% in any case. In this top row, we can see significant differences between ash, with the forage types being the highest in percentage. This is, we're not exactly sure what the reason for this result is, but it probably has to do with the different harvesting techniques and harvesting timing with forages. Maturity is known to affect mineral content in forages. Also, forage harvesters tend to pick up leaf material that has soil on it, which also increases mineral content, so those could be 2 reasons. Here we see significant differences between protein content between the types, with, again, the forage types being highest. This is a more predictable result. We expect the forage types to be very high in protein because, in fact, forage types are selected primarily for crude protein for animal palatability purposes. Also not surprising is that the sucrose percentage was highest in the sweet types. Sweet types are specifically bred to have large amounts of dissolved sugars within the stalk juice. And finally, interesting in this is that the glucans were significantly different. Remember, glucans principally make up cellulose. Here we see some Pearson correlation coefficients between the 9 components. We can see that protein and ash are strongly and significantly correlated with one another. This is good news for the breeder. It indicates that protein content and ash can be selected against and possibly reduced in the same genotype. Here we see an inverse and significant relationship between xylan and protein, indicating we can select against protein content and possibly improve xylan content. Also predictable in this table is that glucans and xylans are significantly positively correlated. Cellulose and hemicellulose are known to exist or to be found in predictable ratios within individuals of the same species. Here we have some correlation coefficients between the 3 structural polymer types. We can see that in the biomass sorghums, all these three structural polymers are positively and strongly correlated with one another, and we can see the same thing in the sweet sorghums. And finally, I have some theoretical ethanol yields. These were calculated using this URL down here, which is from the DOE. These are calculated on a dry weight basis, and we don't have agronomic data to give us any information about how these are going to yield on a per area basis, but you can see in this first column here theoretical ethanol yields when storage carbohydrates are not included, and they range from between 350 to 409 liters per megagram. When we include starch and the other storage carbohydrates, we have a range of between 352 and 533 liters per megagram. Now, from this table, it appears that the sweet sorghums are going to be the winners in this little contest, but that's not necessarily the case. In fact, it's probably not the case. In our experience at Texas A&M, these biomass sorghums tend to yield 20 to 25% more biomass per area, so these yields are probably more similar than they look. And in fact, the biomass sorghum probably yields more ethanol per area. So in conclusion, sorghum has high and immediate value for bioethanol production. We demonstrated high ethanol potential. There's substantial variability within the panel of sorghums that we chose to evaluate. We assume much of this variation is genetic in origin, indicating sorghum is going to be amenable to improvement for bioenergy purposes. And even in the absence of direction from the biochemists, we've already got lines that are potentially very good for bioenergy production, and there's no reason to think that because of the annual nature of sorghum growth cycle as well as the robust communities of research and seed production that we won't be able to make even more progress rapidly. And I mentioned near-infrared spectrometry in the beginning. The reason we obtain this chemistry data is because it's been shown that the traditional forage data that is used to evaluate biomass for bioethanol does not correlate well with true cellulose, hemicellulose numbers in sorghum. So we've done this very expensive dietary fiber analysis, which is not suitable as a selection criteria because of its cost. And we've taken that data and we've developed NIR prediction curves, which will allow us to predict the levels of these constituents indirectly using the NIR machine. And those equations have been submitted for publication and will be available soon. With that, I'd like to acknowledge some funding sources for this work and my co-authors. Bill Rooney's project, Sorghum Breeding Project, is who I work for. Ed is in charge of the National Renewable Energy Laboratory Dietary Fiber Analysis section. Brent and Jeff are colleagues from Texas A&M, and Neelish was my predecessor at A&M as a postdoc. And with that, I'd like to entertain questions.